There are men who think a run is something that mostly happens in banks in a bear market. There are men who think a great run is a 100-yard dash, especially if you can do it in around 10 seconds. And then there's Doug Bost and Adam Bernstein, two men who should have better things to do, but aren't doing them right now. These are two grown-ass men.
Man.
With special guest grown-ass man, Jimmy Palmiotti. Guys,
hey Jimmy.
Hi Jimmy. Hello.
How you doing?
How are you?
Good. Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Good. It's great to meet you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, no sweat. No sweat. I'm glad I got here in time. Where are you guys?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, New York.
Both of you. What part of Brooklyn?
I'm in Prospect Lefferts Gardens.
Okay, white people. And where are you? What part are you in?
I'm in Windsor Terrace.
Windsor. Oh, that name says it all too.
Yeah.
I grew up on Flatbush in Avenue J. That's where it's.
My first 9 years were on Cropsey Avenue, right around where the mall is, where Corvettes used to be. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We're good. We're good.
Yes.
Yeah, so no subject is out of reach. I'm open to anything. So we're good.
Okay, good. Because we wanted to ask about abortion.
Sure. I was not aborted.
Yeah, good. All right. We have that in common. We can move on.
There you go.
I have some of your comics here that we just both read.
Okay.
Editor's note, the trade paperback Adam is holding up here is Harley Quinn, Volume 2, Joker Loves Harley, a great run on Harley Quinn by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti.
We have...
Actually, I hadn't read that before. I just read it recently. I really liked it.
It's a bit of madness, you know. It's a bit of madness.
Totally madness. And we were talking about it. Adam was saying how, you know, it's crazy that Harley is in love with Joker. And yet the thing that I really took away from those issues that you wrote,
yeah,
was that really she's in this abusive relationship and she has tried to draw a line. She's tried to say, hey, I don't want to be with you anymore. And he won't respect it. And she's kind of and I feel like that's kind of a common problem that a lot of women have. They try to stay away from somebody and find that he's not respecting their boundaries. And it's, what's she going to do? You know,
it's definitely that character's issue. Right. And the Joker, how we played it with Dini and Paul Dini and Bruce Timm was, you know, of course, she kind of, you know, was the Joker's toy and he abused her. And we turned the tables and she doesn't need him anymore. She has her own supporting cast and friends. And now he's sniffing around because she doesn't need him. He wants the attention back again. So it's a screwed up relationship. We don't spend a ton of the book making it about the Joker, though.
Yeah.
Because for Harley to succeed when we were handed the book, we had to take her out of Gotham right away. That's like the weakest thing you can do is keep a character in Gotham. It becomes a Batman character. So in order to create basically who she is, what she is, and what she wants, we had to take her out. And because Paul Dini said she was born in Canarsie, Brooklyn, we figured bring her back to Brooklyn. And because Coney Island is Coney Island, what better place for her to kind of make it a home? You know, makes, especially you Brooklynites understand, Coney Island, she would fit right in downtown, you know, in Coney Island, right off
Emerson. Totally.
100%.
Yeah. So it made sense.
But yeah. We also read Red Sonja.
Those are great books.
Yeah. I really like these because I've always been a fan of the sword and sorcery stuff, probably a little bit more than Doug is. And it really felt like you really were getting closer to the Robert E. Howard kind of real grit.
We were shooting for the Roy Thomas, you know, who of course took everything from him. But I grew up reading Red Sonja when Roy Thomas did it, and it had a certain kind of it would push the buttons for adolescent males back then.
And we were just saying that.
And I figured if I'm going to do it now, there's no reason I can't push those buttons again and screw what the world thinks. Amanda and I are going to write it the way we see it. And of course, Sonja's fun, right? Because she kind of tells it like it is. She's very modern in a very barbarian way, you know?
Yeah. Did you guys create the idea that she was invincible?
Yeah, we did that for the book because two things. I wanted to make sure the title had something before it so it stood out from all the other Red Sonja books. And the other thing, we thought it might be fun to play with the idea that she is for a little bit. It was originally 6 issues and then it sold really well. And they said, could you extend it to 10? And we said, yeah, we could do that, but we're going to mess with something then before the 6th one. We're going to have some fun. And it'll make a great trade because you're going to be exhausted by the time you finish reading it. It's a lot of stuff going on, but fun. You know, fun is always the key word with the stuff we do.
You work with your wife a lot, Amanda Connor. Can you just, like, how do you guys work together? How do you write together? Like,
well, we have my office is downstairs, hers is upstairs. First rule. She works in her room. I have my room. We kind of plot together, and we'll do that whether we're traveling or taking a long drive or out somewhere. We get ideas. She takes a lot of notes, and then basically when we have a structure, what we're looking at, I'll type it out. She'll look at it, and then I'll start writing the books. And then when I'm done, she gets it, messes with the dialogue. We send it out to the artist. The artist does the book. We get it. The art back, and we rewrite it to match the artwork.
Mm.
And she's the princess and the pea with writing. Like, it has to be just right. Otherwise, the colorful, colorful language in both those books, that's Amanda kind of going crazy. She loves the language. And Harley's language, of course, is very Brooklyn. It's phonetically incorrect and correct at the same time. And with Sonja, we're trying to write it like the dialogue that Robert E. Howard set up, you know, originally in the book. So
right.
It's kind of, at times it reads a little odd, but people have seen enough stuff that they'll get it. In the context of what she's saying, they'll understand what she means.
I want to read what you wrote on Twitter.
Go ahead.
You wrote, Frank Miller's run on Daredevil, Walt Simonson's run on Thor, Jim Starlin's run on Captain Marvel and Warlock, Barry Smith's on Conan. List your favorite creator's run on a character. I immediately was like, I'm going to call this guy up and try and get him on the show because this is what we like to talk about. And then I read all the responses because people love to talk about this.
Yeah, there's a lot of response. You know, the shame of it, my Twitter feed eats its own, it's like a snake eating its own tail. After 3 months, it just goes away. Because I don't keep it forever because, you know, certain people told me, you don't want to keep that shit out there forever. Eventually, you're going to say something stupid. But that feed, well, because I was thinking about what books I have on my wall, you know, that I keep. And I was like, yeah, these are runs that the creators on fire, all the creators, they're all working together. The character is the best defined it's ever been. And I cry when they go off the book. When I'm off the book, my everything gets shattered. When Jim Starlin is not doing Warlock and Captain Marvel, I don't think I even want to read it. You know, when Frank was doing Daredevil, oh my God, you know, and Klaus stayed on it. And did, you know, they don't happen all the time. I can't tell you what run of something right now is standing out for me.
I made my list, you know, to sort of fill in your list of runs, but I only found one that's really current, and that's the Immortal Hulk.
Right.
I thought it was really good. I don't know how you feel about it, but
yeah, it's a fun book. Paul Mounce, my buddy, colors it.
Just to do body horror with the Hulk is interesting to me. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a fun book.
But yeah, I mean, my list of the best runs has no fewer than 6 Daredevil runs. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, we had somebody on the show a couple months ago who was, we were talking about how Daredevil didn't really hit his stride until, you know, at least 100 issues in.
Yeah.
You know, for a long time, Daredevil was kind of like a meh comic. I mean, even Gene Colan was great, but like it still wasn't. Right. And then when Miller and Jansen took over, it hit like this, like you're saying, like a comet, like a stratosphere.
Yeah. Yep.
But it then was... I think interestingly, that character, other really good creators like Wade and Samney and Brubaker and Bendis and Loeb, and like other people have really been able to take that character and do something great and unique.
I think what Frank did was he went in and completely defined the character and the world he lived in. And when a creator does that, other creators can write that book better. Mm. And because before that, with Gene Colan and Stan and all that, the character kind of jumped around a lot and it was mushy and it was like thrown into places. And it was like a courtroom drama. It was like Perry Mason at times. And what Frank did is he took all the elements and then made it like 10 times more exciting. And you felt there was a ticking time bomb with Frank's series, with what Frank did with Klaus. And, you know, the introduction to Elektra and all the villains felt like all of a sudden the book felt like he was in the real world, like he was actually grounded and he could be killed and he could be messed up and Karen can get killed and all this kind of stuff was going on. And I think once Frank finished the line, it was so defined when he finished his books. I think other creators said, oh, I'd like a shot at that. And they base it all on Frank's stuff. Let's be honest. It's all based on Frank's stuff. You know.
That's interesting, though, that you say that, and I agree with you. Even though Jim Starlin was able to completely define, you know, Warlock, Thanos,
Cosmic Comics.
You know, Captain Marvel. People can't write that after him.
Well, they can't write it, and they also can't draw it, okay? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the appeal to Jim stuff was the 18-panel pages of a cube, you know, changing its shape and people jumping and trying to hit it. And, you know, like Jim had this cinematic feel to it that worked with the writing. And I got to be honest, those characters were never as good as when Jim did it. People just didn't grab it. They still haven't found the right person to do that yet. That's all that means.
I agree with you. I mean, when this stuff came out and I bought it in real time, I flipped out.
Yes.
I flipped out. It was so utterly different and cosmic. And, you know, I wasn't a country bumpkin. I was a real cosmopolitan city kid. I was exposed to a lot of things. Right. And like, I was like, this fits my worldview. Yeah. You know,
yeah. Look, it was sexy. And comics were not sexy in that era. Jim made it sexy, he made it cool, and it wasn't grounded. It completely took you into fantasy land with spaceships and everything. It out-Star-Wars Star Wars, you know, because it was completely cosmic. And he created a universe where you believed what was going on in that universe at all times. It, you know, death was there, you know, the cosmic cube, all that stuff. The coloring was right. Everything was on. You know, it's like Master of Kung Fu with Paul and Doug. When Paul was inking himself.
Oh, my God. Forget it.
Right. They should have never let anybody else ink him. I still stand by that.
Totally agree. And I've spoken to him about that. I mean, occasionally you get somebody who doesn't hurt it.
Right.
You know, but like there's one or two issues where I know there's one in particular. He does the whole issue. And I just remember I must have had 5 copies of that because I wore them out.
Yep. Look, right. I have three original pages from Saber.
Oh, man.
You know, that's because cool. I love Paul on Paul, right? So I tracked those down. They cost me a couple hundred bucks way back when. I inked Paul years later on a Master Kung Fu series for Marvel.
Yeah.
It was still fun, but it was not they were revisiting it, but their heart, it just wasn't there. I didn't think, you know, I was inking it with hopes of, you know, can I have Reston? Can I have Marlon Brando and all these guys coming into the comic? And, you know, I wanted all that craziness. And I realized they were trying to modernize it. And I'm like, no, 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 don't modernize it. Just do what you do. Do what you do best, you know.
You did a great job, though. I mean, I recently, in prep for just talking with you, I looked at them all again. And you did do a great job. Way better than hard, some other guys did.
I worked hard on it, but it still wasn't, you know, like I said, even Paul did a nice job on it, but it wasn't the same guy that drew it 20 years earlier. I honestly feel with Time Bomb, he actually went back in time and said, I'm just going to do what I liked. And I felt like that was a better book. But, you know, we're talking about quality when it's all on the top. So high and then higher, you know.
Have you ever wanted to take a shot at any of the Starlin stuff?
Oh, my God. Like to write it? I would love to, but I would have to. If I was working for Marvel, I'd have to kind of worry about, I guess I would be told what I can and can do. And I would literally want to write it the day that his last issue ended. I'd really want to do it the next day and not worry about the Marvel Universe and the Guardians and all that stuff. Only Jim can do that. Like, he created something that was him. It's like the Spirit done by anybody else but Will Eisner. It's fun, but it's not the same. I don't even care if it's Darwin. I don't care if it's anybody. There's nobody like Will Eisner. And it's never going to, you know, I want to see the creators do their own character. And I think that's the only way we get this stuff, these great runs, you know.
Well, that was, so, okay. So then I have a question about the runs question, because when I was making my list of great runs,
right,
I thought, maybe there's a rule actually about runs, and I made it for myself and making my list, that like the first 100 issues of Spidey is not really a run, because they've started from scratch and created that
right
character in that world. And the, you know, Hellboy is not exactly a run. As great as it is, it's more like he's always doing that.
Yeah, I mean, so Spider-Man, I'll say there's a Ditko run and there's a John Romita Sr. run for Spider-Man 1 to 100, right?
Right.
There's a Ditko ones and there's a John Romita Sr. So to me, those are two different runs. Like, because when Johnny Sr. came in, it became about Mary Jane and it became about all that stuff. Before that, it was Spider-Man Sevier and Steve Ditko. So I consider those like runs, you know. It's not always writer, it's not always story. Sometimes it's the artist that creates the run. It's not, and it's, you know, and most of those will all stand, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, so it was two different people creating great comics. I mean, the first 100 issues of Spider-Man are wonderful. But but Jack Kirby's run on FF went to 100 and something issues. It was all Jack.
Three on my list.
Yeah.
Well, I also wanted to mention one of my big runs, and we just did a show about Steve Gerber pretty recently, like a pretty in-depth show.
Howard.
And I mean, I of course love Howard the Duck intensely, but I think his run on Man-Thing was incredible.
Yeah.
Especially for the time.
Because that series was about the writer. I will say that series was about the writer. And I also loved his Howard the Duck. I mean, nobody can write Howard the Duck like him. Absolutely no one.
Nobody, yeah.
It's never been that good, and it never will be.
And, but that's an example. It's interesting. It's because it's kind of the reverse of what you were saying about Frank Miller.
Right, yes.
He totally defined who Howard is, and he owns it.
Right, but here's the thing, right? So what's harder to write than dark action or adventure? The hardest thing to write in comics is humor.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Because if your sense of humor is off by a bit, it doesn't land on the page. And if your artist isn't in the zone when that sense of humor is happening, it lands flat on the page. There's 1,000 ways to die from humor. You can do dark comics all day long. Right, you can do action comics on it, but humor, I mean, even in movies, you know this, humor's tough. At one point, I remember Dan DiDio asked me, he says, do you think you can teach a class maybe for the new up-and-coming writers about how to write humor? And I said, nope. I said, they're either funny or they're not. I can't make someone funny. I can't, you know.
Well, I was reminded of Gerber when I was reading a couple issues of your of the Harley Quinn series, when she and Poison Ivy go to the nudist colony. It had that same kind of demented craziness that is like when Howard goes to the island of Dr. Bong, and I thought yes. It was great.
Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy went to the nudist colony, and Howard the Duck paid a visit to Dr. Bong. Harley and Howard lit one up, Poison Ivy drank from a Poison Ivy cup. Yeah, that's how you do it, 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 son. Writing Comedy 101.
Well, you know, the thing with the Harley stuff, and that issue in particular, for me, is always like the comic should always try to push the envelope and be a tiny bit dangerous. And you should always, Amanda and my goal has always been, you're not going to know what's going to happen next. I don't care how you read this comic. There is no way you can see where we're going with it. But that was the fun of our run on Harley, is if you read the Harley Quinn Little Black books, your brain will explode, because they're all 48 page stories of Harley teaming up with other superheroes, and they're completely dangerous. There's one with Lobo that Simon Bisley drew that's just, it's just the craziest thing I've ever worked on. But I've always felt like, well, the comics should feel that way. It shouldn't be Batman and the Harley Quinn and Clayface and Joker. It's so done to death. Like, why would you want to read that every month? It's the same thing.
What else is on your shelf for runs? Like, when you look at the stuff that makes you cry because they're not doing it anymore, what's up there?
It's funny because I can't turn the computer, but my wall is here is a new X-Men, and that was by Grant Morrison and Frank Bradley. Of course, there's Frank's Daredevils. There's the Fantastic Four Volume 1, 2, and 3. There's Preacher Volume 1 and 2, which I love. There's Solo, which I loved as a series because it highlighted the artist. That's a great series. There's Conan the Barbarian. It's all the Barry Smith ones and a couple of John Buscema's. There's Uncanny X-Men, Claremont, John Byrne, Terry Austin. Dead Man Omnibus by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams.
They said that was the only book that the Marvel guys would read for a while.
I believe it. You basically see where my brain is at. That's like, it's like.
What do you think is the best Superman run?
So my brain goes back to my Supermans when I was a kid, and each issue was completely ridiculous. And it was Kurt Swan and all these guys. But Superman run, I don't have any.
I read a thing recently called Superman Smashes the Klan.
Right.
And I thought that was really good.
It's good? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good. I thought it was really cool. It's based on an old radio show.
Oh, okay. And, oh, all right. I think I know about that. That was, that was this past year, right? Or year and a half?
Yeah, Gene Luen Yang.
I'll check that out.
I don't have Superman on any of my list. No, I never could get next to Superman.
I like Superman when it was ridiculous. I don't know how to explain it, but I like him with the 9 color kryptonites and the animal super pets. And I liked it when it was ridiculous because when I was a kid, I thought it was like, so they just kept making up shit every issue about him. Like another thing was sent from Krypton and another thing was found from Krypton. And then there's his cousin and there's his sister-in-law and there's a monkey. I only got to write Superman a couple of times. And the one story I wanted to do, they said, absolutely not. And because I did a story where the bad guy kidnapped Lois Lane and hid her from Superman. Superman could not find her on the planet. And Superman and Clark slowly start going crazy. They can't find her. No matter what he does, he can't find her. And then he starts getting mailed pieces of her. her finger comes in first, and then another finger, and it's obviously Lois. And Clark Kent starts, he just can't hold it together anymore. Basically, the bad guy cloned Lois and then cut up the clone and kept sending parts to Clark because he knew Clark was Superman. And Superman was not mentally stable by the end of the story. And they were like, absolutely not. And I was like, well, I said, you know, there's only so much you can do with Superman. He's so strong. I said, psychologically, you could mess him up.
Right.
You know, and that would do it. And I said, and what do we do with a psychologically unstable Superman flying around? And that was basically the story of Superman not being right in the head for a while.
Oh, I mean, essentially, though, that is the thing with all the superheroes is that the way you could fuck with them is their head.
Yes. Yes. and that's what Daredevil did so well. And that's what, if we look at all our favorite stuff, a lot of that has to do with that, you know. You know, the Claremont and Burns X-Men run, you know, it's like we were reading what was in their head. Those word balloons, they were extensive. And we got a really good idea of who each character was. I love that.
I was deep into that run. That was I had a break too. Like I had my early years where I just discovered comics and it was a different world even by comics. We've often talked about this. We should ask you. But like, and then I took a break to play the freaking bass, learn how to play the bass.
Right,
and then I went back and that's when that Claremont Byrne X-Men thing. And I just couldn't wait every month for those.
Yeah, that was the thing about the good ones. The Claremont Byrne X-Men, you would get together with your friends. You would say, oh my God, did you see this? Yeah. You would run over to talk about the new issue.
They would go shopping in a mall.
Yeah.
Like, when did the characters do that? You know, like, he had these things in the stories that grounded them so much that we felt like we knew them so well. You know, Kitty's anxiety, Storm's flashbacks to her childhood and frustration, that all that stuff was so well-defined. Chris was knocking it out of the park every month. And then John and Terry Austin were, like, killing it. Like, it just kept getting better. We never wanted it to end, you know, and when it did, it was heartbreaking because there was nothing John could do that would be as good as that, you know. Mm. I mean, Superman stuff was great and everything, but it doesn't look like that X-Men stuff. That stuff was like magic, you know. It was lightning in a bottle, and that's why
Iron Fist had that look too, which
I love it.
Oh my God, it was.
That's where I fell in love with Misty Knight and Colleen Wing.
Yeah.
Was in John Byrne's Iron Fist. I love those characters. And I said, my God, I can't believe they don't do 100 books on these two girls. You know, crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead, Doug.
I was just going to say thank you for talking to us. I don't want to take up your whole night, but I want to ask what you're working on now.
So finishing up Sonya. So issue 10 comes out in a couple of months and that ends. I like books that actually end. And that has ending. I have like three endings in the last issue, which is fun to do. I'm a big fan of that Shawshank movie where it just keeps ending for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I love that movie, you know, I love that I saw three endings in that movie and each one was just as satisfying as the last one. You cannot watch the last 20 minutes of that movie and walk out of the room.
Yeah.
You have to see when he gets to that boat at the end, you know, like, and I love that in storytelling. So with Sonya, I have a lot of endings in the last issue. Amanda and I have a thing. We're doing a thing like with digital comics called Zest World. So if you go to zestworld.com, you can subscribe. I'm doing a book there that's called Found. And it's about a dad and his two kids who are filming live for like a National Geographic type thing. They're on a volcanic island in international waters in the Pacific. And while they're podcasting live to the world, this volcano's going to erupt. The volcano spits out a spaceship. And the story becomes about everyone on Earth trying to get to that island first to get to that ship. It's sort of like a reverse. Obviously, the show Lost was fun, so I just did Found. Very original of me, Jim. And then... Amanda's doing a strip. I'm doing a strip with Amanda on Zoom on the Zest World. It's called Boom Pow. It's about two characters, Booty Pow Pow and K Boom. It's about a girl who owns a donut shop in Albuquerque that accidentally finds an immortal in the desert and goes on with her life babysitting an immortal. Other than that, I got a lot of conventions. We're doing, we'll be at New York City Comic Con, so that'll be in your guys' neck of the woods.
I'm just curious, how much do you think about TV when you're coming up with ideas? Like, your idea about the volcano and the spaceship, like, it just is, it struck me naturally as a series idea.
Well, I got the idea when I was watching a volcano on TV, and Amanda and I were watching it, and I said, imagine how freaked out everyone would be if it spit out a spaceship. And then I was like, that's kind of a cool idea. Like, but why? Why would a ship be under the earth for, you know, millions of years? It has to work as a comic first in my world. TV show, it's great if somebody's interested in it, but I can't think of that. You cannot think of TV or movies if you're writing a comic, because it'll stop you from getting insane. Yeah, I just feel like a lot of people write comics now because they want to sell it as films or movies. And the problem with that is they dial down the craziness on it when they do that. I'm the opposite way. I figure if they're going to make a movie or TV show out of it, that's their challenge. My book is going to be the same no matter what.
That's verbatim what Jerry Conway told us when he was talking about Spider-Man and things like that. He was saying exactly the same thing, that he was like, thank God, you know, they can screw it up all they want. We've still got the comics to look back at.
Yeah. And look at the career Jerry had. I mean, Jesus, you know, guy's amazing.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Anyway, man, that was really enjoyable. Great to meet you. Hopefully we'll see you in some other form at a con or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll talk to you guys soon.
So long, Jimmy.
Take care, guys.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.